My name is Josh. I'm a pastor in Denver, Colorado. I'm a white millennial. I used to play in a punk band. I have an amazing wife and three kids. I grew up in a Southern Baptist pastor's family, and my family is definitely from the South. This is The Cultural Christ.
Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, J.W. Buck. In this podcast, we explore the intersection between the Christian faith and cultural identity. We hold interviews with followers of Jesus to discuss the way our faith impacts our culture and how our cultural identity impacts faith. Now to this week's episode. Welcome, Joshua Lewis, to The Cultural Christ. How you doing, man?
Doing great. Excited to be doing this.
So we go, I think we can say way back. Are we old enough to say way back?
Yeah, I think so. It's been a bit that we've known each other. It's great.
Yeah, Bible college years back in the burbs of SoCal, Simi Valley, California. We met doing ministry together a little bit. I remember a houseboat trip. You were leading worship. I was speaking. We were both young, figuring out ministry, figuring out life. And we've had different conversations over the years about culture, cultural identity. So I'm excited to talk to you. And let us know first, where are you at right now? What are you up to? I'd love to hear a little bit about your life.
Yeah, so my family and I, we live here in Denver, Colorado. I've been married for 10 years to my wife, Courtney. Love her. She's super sweet. And I have three kids now. I have a seven-year-old girl. I did this in a weird order. A seven-year-old girl, an eight-year-old boy. And then we just had a new fresh baby. She is 5 months old, I think. It's hard for me to keep track with the months, but yeah. So Denver, we live here in Denver, and we started a church here from scratch, church planting, that whole thing. We moved here 5 years ago, and we actually moved into this house that I'm in right now, and did kind of the classic thing of we started a Bible study in this very living room, and that went for about a year, and we were trying to add people, invite people into that, and then did kind of an official Sunday morning gathering thing out of a venue. We started that doing Sunday morning gatherings on September 2019.
Nice.
And you all know what happened like 6 months later, the pandemic.
Great timing, Josh.
Yeah. So honestly, it was really hard at certain moments. I definitely wanted to quit, but I wouldn't trade it. I think it did things to us that were good. It was challenging in ways that sucked, but also, I mean, challenging in ways that I think we had to rely on Jesus. So.
Well, thanks for sharing about that. Anthem Denver, you guys check them out online. So let's hop in. Tell me a little bit about your cultural background. How would you describe that?
I would describe my cultural background as I grew up in a Southern Baptist family. My dad is actually a Southern Baptist pastor. And my family is actually Southern also. They're from the American South, Texas. A lot of my family history, like back quite a few generations, is actually all in Texas. And if you know Texas people at all, it's funny. They see themselves as this unique, like different than the rest of the South, and kind of a little bit really into themselves sometimes. But and I have a lot of family from Texas going back quite a few generations. And so my dad was a football coach for the first like 2 or 3 years of my life in Texas.
Nice.
And so you can assume some of the culture that he was involved at that point, and then became a Baptist pastor, and he moved his whole family. And so me, obviously, to a rural town in northeastern Colorado. And so I did kindergarten in a town of 600 people.
Wow.
And kind of the middle of nowhere. Just imagine Kansas or Nebraska. That's what it was like. And so that actually, I mean, I was in a very small rural town in northeastern Colorado until I was a sophomore in high school. And my family moved to Denver. And it's funny, I mean, you know, for people who know bigger cities, Denver's not that large of a city. It's still pretty humble in size. But for me, moving from a town of, my family eventually relocated to this other tiny northeastern Colorado town. But to move from a town of, it was like 10,000 people to Denver felt like, you know, the big city. I felt like I was in New York City or something, you know, in my mind. But a lot of that was really formative. I think that is for sure a cultural thing that formed who I was. So, and I guess just in a few other things, you know, so I grew up Protestant, Southern Baptist. And for me, I think just my personality, I am more of like a creative kind of, I think of myself as an artist kind of person. I have an artist's heart. And I think I really resented being in kind of evangelical Christianity and being, I felt forced into, especially being in a pastor's family. And so from a pretty early age, I was really into punk rock and indie music and alternative culture. And so I mentioned that because, you know, for me, I think at this point in my life, I can see that alternative culture and indie music and punk, whatever, all of that and the ethos of all of that really did have a profound impact on the way I think and some of how I see the world. And now, I mean, I'm actually a pastor now. I'm not in a punk band or anything. to tell a little bit more of my story. When I graduated high school, I pretty much immediately got away from my family as quickly as possible, gave them the proverbial finger. I joined a band and just was, I lived really recklessly and very rebellious and played in a bunch of dive bars. And so I came to faith in Jesus when I was about 25. When I actually was going to the same church that you went to, Josh. That was amazing. And I've now had some redemptive moments with my family and I love them. They're wonderful. Just like any family, you know, they're wonderful and also have issues, you know, it's just like we all kind of experience that, but that's, I think, I don't know. Is that a robust, good enough answer for my culture? I don't know. Figuring it out. I mean, I missed the most blatantly obvious one. I'm a white male. that's part of who I am. So
yeah. No, I appreciate that. And it's cool to hear the story, the through line, rural America, Texas to Colorado, you know, SoCal for college, Denver, where you're at now, family. It's really neat to hear. And, you know, you talked about alternative culture, punk rock culture, and that being an important part of your identity. What are some of the values within that subculture that have formed you for those who aren't as familiar with that? Because we're talking about like the subculture within music, but that is some of the most forming identities people can hold once they give mm-hmm. themselves over to like a musical subculture. And mm-hmm. for those of us that are less musical than you, people don't know, but you're a musician as well and an artist. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to really give yourself over to that subculture in America? And is it a white subculture? I've always seen it as that because I've been a Blink fan, which they're like, they're not really completely that subculture, but like, is it a white subculture? And then what are the values of it?
I think it's a really fascinating question. And I don't want to act like I'm an expert on like punk rock history or anything, but to answer that first, the last thing you just mentioned, there is a not great, there were moments in punk rock history that were at moments attached to some like neo-Nazi stuff. And, but you know, there's plenty of other bands and people within that culture that eventually for sure kicked that out. And I think when I think about alternative culture, you know, I mean, I think about like Kurt Cobain in the 90s. And to me, much of the attitude and the ethos of, and I think a lot of these go together, which would be indie music, or punk culture or alternative culture is it is a bit of like a, we're at a kind of, we're standing against everything else. it's a rebellious posture. And that's kind of at its most extreme, but you know, to be alternative is just that word in itself, is that you're an alternative to regular society. And so, you know, I mean, honestly, yeah, no, I think it's definitely gone way beyond just white culture at this point, which I think can be some of the cool thing about some of the things I love about, you know, when you think about alternative culture, is that it's a group of people that won't necessarily just go with the flow just because everybody else says, hey, we go this way. You know, alternative culture would say, well, no, we should press against, press back against the norms. Just because society says this doesn't mean we have to do it. Yeah. And so there can be, I think, some redemptive things, in that, you know, I mean, more recently, obviously, like LGBTQ culture has, I think, come in to, what is, you know, known as alternative culture. And, I don't think it's just white. That's my opinion, but
that's good. Let's transition to Jesus and faith. What was your first mental image of Jesus? And you grew up in a Southern Baptist home. You know, what was the cultural background of Jesus that you learned about within the church settings and the spiritual settings that you were in?
I think that I'll say I don't have a memory of anyone ever trying to say that Jesus was white. I mean, I can remember in Sunday school, what are funny pictures of, or drawings of Jesus where he's like pale skinned, and which is so ironic if you think about, you know, where Jesus was living and doing ministry. There's no way the guy had pale skin. I mean, it just doesn't even seem possible. I remember learning about his Jewish, Hebrew heritage, and it just all seemed to make sense to me.
Yeah.
And it seems silly to think that I do know of Americans kind of wanting to make him look or seem a certain, you know, anglicized culture, which is honestly funny to me. It's like, this is silly.
Yeah. I appreciate that perspective. So the intersection between following Jesus and your cultural identity, what has that journey been like for you?
So when I think about my cultural identity, I think at this point, my walk with Jesus, my faith that I carry, my working assumption, Josh, is there are things about my cultural assumptions that are good, and there are going to inevitably be things about my cultural assumptions that are also not good, or you could say, I'm not in line with the kingdom of God. And I think as my faith has intersected, or as Jesus has intersected or integrated into my life, my discipleship from now until I die is going to be hopefully a more and more holistic, integration of who Jesus is and his kingdom values, and hopefully kicking out those things that shouldn't be there. And I guess the stuff that comes to mind for me, with my culture, or cultural background, I think, you know, Southern family, Protestant, I'll just kind of deal with those two first. I think there's definitely just, this is good and bad. I think a lot of these things, as I've processed it through it, it can often be two sides of the same coin. I think a lot of Southern people are really very sure of themselves, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. We get stuff done. And I think the word is individualistic and driven. My family and what I come from is very driven. You know, they want to be efficient. They want to make stuff happen. And I think there is some of that can be beautiful, you know, that my dad's a really hard worker, and I love that. And I come from a family of people that work hard, but I think, you know, I mean, this is somewhat just a lot of just Western people in general. And I'm sure this is not just a white thing also, but individualism from my background is just rampant. And I just see as I get closer to Jesus, just how it can often be so damaging to living out faith well. I am a part of a community. I'm a part of a church that is, it's global. It's got a lot of different types of people in it. And it's not just about me. I think that's something that really comes to mind. Even the driven thing, I think that Jesus redeeming that can be beautiful, but sometimes it's also just a way to be controlling, or another way just to be selfish, like to get stuff, to be driven to get things that I want. Those are the things that come to mind for me.
I appreciate that. And what I hear is self-reflection and analyzing your upbringing and your culture in light of, like you said, the kingdom of God, the gospel, who Jesus is, and trying to understand the pros and cons, the positives and negatives of that, which is really hard. It's really hard to do. And it's even harder to change. I mean, you just described my family as well. You know,
yeah.
There's a lot of overlap. And so what does it look like to redeem those aspects of our just wonderful families we're a part of, but also not shying away from kind of the liability that can be? You've already touched on it some, and this is another question off script, but what does it look like, or what does it mean to you to be a white Christian? How are you processing that from a cultural perspective?
Yeah, my thoughts on that, you know, I think that there are particular things about me and my family and where I come from that might be different than some other white people, you know, and I think
that's good.
Yeah, I just would want to be, I want to be generous to all people. To me, I just think this is some of this stuff. When I think about it, I'm like, it feels like things you're supposed to learn on the playground. And, you know, one of the classic things that you're supposed to learn is that you're not supposed to judge a book by its cover, which is good wisdom. And I think, you know, even sometimes, you know, people do like the positive judgmentalism, you know, like that people group, they're all good at, you know, whatever. And I think this is a little off script to your off script question,
good.
But I think no one, for the most part, loves or feels loved by being, or having assumptions made about them. And I think as far as my whiteness and where I come from and how I process it, I think that, I mean, I guess the first thing that I would want to say is that I am aware that I live in a majority white city. I live in Denver, Colorado, and it is true. It is a majority white city. I will say sometimes people will make snarky comments about how white it is here. And I don't always love that, by the way, just because, I mean, I think if we're being honest, if we're just wanting to be honest, then it's a fine comment. But I also feel like there are people who are not white. There are people of color. There's definitely other populations of people who do live here. I mean, I think it's, I should probably have fact checked this, but I think it's something of 30% Latino, which is not nothing. That's a large population of people who live here and have called Denver home for a long time. And so, you know, I just think it can be dismissive when people make comments, like, oh, it's just a white city. However, it makes sense that it might be easier for me to get along and to get around and do my thing here, being a white person myself in a majority white city, you know? And so when I think about it, I think one of my favorite verses is from Philippians 2, verse 3 says, "Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, rather in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others." And then it goes on to say, Paul then says, in your relationships, then he kind of does this beautiful poetic description of Jesus. And the description is mainly about how Jesus, being God, really lowered himself, that he would condescend to becoming a human and living the life that he lived. And so, yeah, I guess my basic answer is, like, I think every human has different versions of, we call it privilege. And we all have different versions of that, some more, some less. And I don't think the Bible's nervous about talking about it personally. And I don't think the Bible denies it either. We all have these things, privilege. It's just about how you use it and what you do. And so this is my thought about being a white pastor, is that I'd want to consider other people who might feel marginalized, or people that, even just if we're a majority white church and someone who's not white comes in, obviously just, the numbers, the lack of diversity in my church might make someone feel lesser than. And I would want to, my prayer would be that we'd want to lift them up and love them, and that we'd consider them greater than ourselves. We'd want to have humility towards them. And so I guess, that's my kind of my Bible answer. Yeah, I'm sure there's more that I should be thinking through, but that's kind of my knee-jerk reaction. So.
Yeah, I love it. It's fun hearing Philippians 2 as the way in which we should operate culturally in the world. I love how you gave an example of your church, and for people who are not going to be a part of whatever majority group is there coming in, what does it mean to love and care for people? I'd love to hear too, man, because you are a pastor. When you look at Jesus and the Gospels, most of us are in a cross-cultural relationship with Christ. That is to say, we don't come from the same part of the world. We don't eat the same food. We don't speak the same language. You and I shared that we're guys, like Jesus was a guy. Mm-hmm. But there's more differences than our commonalities. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to hear from your perspective, as you have gotten to know Jesus better, what has drawn you to Christ and drawn you to this Jewish savior, whether it's a passage, whether it's a theme, whether it's one of the Gospels, like what has really pulled you in from this punk rock, I'm rejecting my youth and my family, bringing you back to that Christ?
Yeah, I love how you brought up the punk culture again. I mean, I think that Jesus would be the best version of what I would say is the healthy part of maybe punk or indie culture. And I don't want to overtalk that. I think something that is currently fascinating to me about Jesus is I think of him as the most well-differentiated human to ever live. And I'll explain what I mean by that. To be differentiated is, I think the most simple way to think about it is that it's someone that they neither need to fight or choose flight, and that a differentiated person can sit in places of tension. They can exist where someone might really disagree with them, or like you could, a person that can be in an environment where people are espousing maybe views that you don't agree with, really maybe even hateful or horrible, like things that are not good, but a well-differentiated person neither needs to go and destroy those others or run away. And what I love about Jesus is he just constantly steps into spaces that seem uncomfortable, where there's people who are different than him. And he does challenge, but I think I would just invite people to really think about the way that Jesus usually does challenge, even the religious leaders who were the ones who ended up killing him. The way that he challenges is usually very thoughtful. And it's not, he's not running through any of those fallacies of, he's not just attacking their character. He's not just building a straw man. It's very thoughtful and slow. And then also people who are, I think it's interesting. I don't know if we give enough attention to this, the way that Jesus deals with sinful people as well, because he is perfect. Jesus is like a very pure, I think so often church people get a bad rap because we make people who are, maybe less religious, or people who have gone through hard things, or whatever, people who might be impure, can make people feel bad or judged. But somehow the purest human of all time was able to be in the presence of really dirty, shameful people who were really different than him, and made them feel loved and accepted. And I don't know if that makes sense. So it's fascinating to me that Jesus is able to, he's able to be different and he's okay with it. I love that. I would love to be much more like that.
I appreciate you bringing that up in a cultural moment where we're being drawn into political tribes. We're finding people online in groups and on apps to just reinforce what we believe. And you see Jesus standing up to those who are in authority in creative ways, like you said, but still being around them. And then, yes, being around people who are really broken and who are designated as sinful and broken and accepting them, also calling them to new life. Man, what an example for any Christian living in America, right? And any church that we're a part of or have started. I think there are so many cultural lessons to be learned, and I appreciate you drawing those out. Josh, last question, also off script. What was the turning point for you coming back to Jesus? What was it that brought you back to faith and going from somebody who, like, I definitely am a prodigal son-ish. We didn't go into it completely, but definitely that, to I am a pastor who's like going to Bible college and wants to start a church.
I want to answer, especially just in light of this kind of overall topic of culture and culture background and stuff. I think that, you know, you sent me some questions beforehand, and one of them, I don't remember exactly how it was phrased, but did I, you know, if I felt accepted or how I felt in a church environment, something like that. I think that there's a lot of ways for many different people, for a lot of different reasons, to maybe feel uncomfortable in church or religious environments. I think it can happen, you know, and especially if you're a person of color or you're a minority or you, or for whatever other reasons, you know, you feel like, hey, I don't fit into this place. Church, for a lot of reasons, is just one of those places. I mean, you see this in the Bible where the temple or religious spaces, it can so easily become a place where people feel, lack of a better term, marginalized or pushed out, or like, I got to stand in the outer ring, you know, of the temple, the Gentile courts. And I think for me, you know, I did have a lot of shame coming back into a Christian community. I've made a lot of bad choices, just personal life choices, and had really kind of given myself to just a lot of rebellious living. The very easy answer is there was people that loved me, and there was people that they didn't let the differences that I felt, they wouldn't let me make that a thing in a good way. You know, like, as I would say, oh, I'm filled with shame, I'm sinful. I had plenty of amazing friends, or new friends that I was making in the church that were saying, hey, that's not a thing. Come closer. Jesus embraces you. Even in your wretchedness, Josh, you are dirty, but that's exactly what Jesus is for. He's going to actually redeem that and heal that part of you. And I think that's I know that that's available for so many people in many different ways. And, you know, that's my prayer for people that feel, you know, it's just so easy. I don't know, just the religious thing can just so easily estrange people, make them feel left out. So it was humans, dude. It was good people that loved Jesus and they loved me.
Last question.
Yeah.
You ready for this? And staying on the church topic, why shouldn't people give up on the church? And I ask this question because in this cultural moment, we're recording, whatever, fall 2023, post-COVID, whatever that means. And all the statistics say, and the research has shown, that there is a big drop-off, not only in church attendance, but trust in the church, mm-hmm. belief in this cultural organization that God started, the church. What about that for you is important? And for those who are listening who are like, Jesus is great, cultural Christ is great, what you guys said about Jesus is great. But yeah, Josh, you're right about how the church can really make it harder for people and marginalize people or push people out. Why should people be drawn into church?
Well, the first part of my answer, I want to say, you know, this is tough. I don't know exactly how to deal with this, but not every church community is the same. Some obviously have failed people. I have great empathy for anyone that goes through things that, you know, there's certain people have experienced real, legitimate, tough, damaging, traumatic things from churches. And so it can happen because churches are made of humans and humans are imperfect. Every human needs saving and rescuing. But why would I say that we shouldn't give up on the church? Because the church, well, I think the first thing you mentioned, stats about people leaving the church. There's also a ton of stats post-COVID about loneliness and depression and suicide in this country also going up a lot. The Surgeon General put out a book in the last few years about the whole thing was just about loneliness. And it's funny to me, if you look at kind of his premise is mainly people should be in communities. And that's definitely not my only reason that I think people should be in church, but I think it's a decent beginning point is we need brothers and sisters. We need, you know, there's such a breakdown of the family unit in this country, which is really sad. And for many people that experience stuff like that, I would just want to say, hey, like you can still have a version of family. You can have people that you can consider like a brother or like a sister that you would lean on. And, you know, again, I mean, not every church is the same. Not every church community is perfect, but I pray for people to have a place where they can be known, the good and the bad about who they are, where they can be fully themselves, and be welcomed in like family. And that's what the church is supposed to be at its best, is supposed to be like a healthy family. And I think a lot of people need something like that. And then, I mean, then the particular thing for me is that it is the place where I actually think the presence of God is most found in a community. And that's maybe sounds like a hot take to some people, but it is what Ephesians 2 kind of says, is that this is the dwelling place for God, is the temple, which is the people. And you know, I think in like a less, maybe that maybe sounds dramatic or like the pastor's answer. I think a lot of people could maybe, if you think about some people who've experienced good moments with Jesus, I would guess that 9 times out of 10, some of those, a lot of those moments weren't you sitting listening to some amazing sermon, although that can be great, or wasn't just some powerful worship song, although that's great.
Yeah.
But is, most for me, it's moments where I recollect like, wow, my friend sat across the table from me and they loved me. And I experienced the presence of God through a member, a brother or sister of the church, you know? And I think that's why I think you should be a part of the church, is for healing. So you can experience God, you know, another image bearer that sits across the table from you and they reflect God's presence onto you, which I think to your culture thing, which is why we need every tribe, tongue, nation, you know, cause we can't all just reflect the image of God. We all got to bring different things to the table and we're only going to get the full picture from every part of the globe coming together. That's the dream, you know?
Josh, thanks so much for being with me today. If you guys are in Denver or anywhere near there, check out Anthem Denver. Josh Lewis doing amazing work. Thanks for planning the church and being awesome, dude.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me on here. This is fun.
Thank you so much for listening. If you want more content, you can go to jwbuck.org or follow me on Instagram, handles jwbuck. If you have any questions about culture, cultural identity, or faith, feel free to send me a message. Hope you'll join us next week.